Aretz Sheva is, to me, more than just a radio station. Aretz Sheva is a concept. It represents to me, where I'm sitting, unfortunately, here in the diaspora, a movement, a love of the land of Israel, a commitment to its preservation and its settlement by Jews for Jews. I think anyone who supports Eretz Yisrael the way portrayed by Aretz Sheva should support it. It's more than just Israel National Radio. It's a way of life.
You are listening to Aretz Sheva, IsraelNationalRadio.com.
Israel National Radio presents Welcome to the Tribe with Gabriela Lichko.
Hi, it's Gabriela Lichko again with Welcome to the Tribe. And today we are having a rather very, very hot topic. Today we are talking about Islam. But Islam not in a mainstream way. So first of all, there is a brand new book now. What it's called Cracking the Quran Code. And this is about God's land, Torah, and people covenants with Israel in the Quran and the Islamic tradition. What's there mean? Do you think that any side of the Islam and the Muslim tradition exists today, what it could be pro-Jewish and pro-Israel? In the following interview, you will get a couple of answers to this. And let me introduce you Lovell Galin, who is the author of this book. We could imagine that this gentleman is coming from a Sephardi Mizrahi country, that's why he is having opinion and knowledge about Islam. But what we know, this is not the same. So please, Lovell, introduce yourself and tell me how you get in touch with the interest of Islam and the Quran. Because you are an Orthodox Jew, it's like, sounds very awkward today.
Gabriela, thank you for inviting me on your show to talk about my first new book, Cracking the Quran Code, God's Land, Torah, and People Covenants with Israel in the Quran and Islamic Tradition. I've always been interested in non-Jews who were interested in Judaism and Israel. And through Professor Nachum Rakover, the former Deputy Attorney General of Israel, I got to know Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi of Rome, Italy.
So, there are still a lot of questions. First, I would like to know who are you, and afterwards I'm having the second question about Sheikh Palazzi.
Well, I came back to Israel on April 1st, 1992, 19 years ago, with my wife and our two girls, and I'm a journalist. I've been a member of the Foreign Press Association in Israel for 19 years. And I have an organization, the Root and Branch Association Limited. That's my social work. And we have a lecture series at the Orthodox Union Israel Center for 16 years, since January 1995. And we research and interact with non-Jews who are interested in Judaism and Israel.
Including Muslims.
Yes.
Today, the Jewish world look at Islam from a certain type of perspective. I know that 500 years ago it was different, and 500 years ago it was a moderated Islam, but we don't know about this, the existence of this type of Islam today. Because if you are opening up the television, you just hear about the extremists and the fanatics. So what is your research about this other side?
One of the purposes in writing the book was just this: to make the world more aware of Muslims and Muslim-majority nations who are pro-American and pro-Israel and who respect Jews and Christians, as what the Quran calls people of the book, and who respect good people of all religions.
You just talked about the Quran. When you got in touch with the Quran, and how is your interest about different religions coming from?
Well, I was introduced to Dr. Asher Eder by Yaakov Fogelman of the Torah Outreach Program here in the early 1990s. And Dr. Eder, who converted to Judaism, had traveled through Muslim countries in the 1950s before coming to join us and marrying a Holocaust survivor. He's lived here since then. He's almost 90. And he wrote what I think is a historic and prophetic essay, which I found at Dr. Fogelman's Torah Outreach Program, called Peace is Possible, between Ishmael and Israel according to the Quran and the Tanakh. That was my first encounter with this.
That's a very, very, very moving topic again. When we are saying peace today in Israel to the left, it means a certain thing. When we are telling this to the right, it means a certain thing. Like, what do you think about peace? What is this peace cover?
Dr. Ader's thesis said that you cannot have peace between groups that is not based on their deepest religious beliefs. And he said his research showed that the Quran, like our Tanakh, affirmed God's land, Torah, and people covenants with Israel, meaning that God gave the land of Israel to the children of Israel, that God gave the Torah to the children of Israel, and that God commanded the children of Israel to believe in Him and to live faithfully according to His Torah in the land of Israel.
So when you are talking about this real peace, you are not thinking about giving out lands from the land of Israel and make a treaty with the Muslims. This is something different, what you think about?
That would be impossible. Real peace cannot be based on going against God's commandments. And for Muslims, that would be as in their own Quran. You can't have peace between Muslims and Jews, Arabs and Israelis, based on going against what their own Quran teaches, which is that God gave the land of Israel to us.
So you think that there are still Muslims who really agree with this thing in the Quran that God gave the land of Israel to the Jews and the Jews are the owners of this place?
Absolutely. As we quote in our book, the Uzbek ambassador to Israel said in his greetings to our second Noahide conference held here at the Israel Center in written greetings, Ambassador Rustam Isayev, ambassador of the most powerful nation in Central Asia, said, I'm quoting now, we Uzbeks rejoice that the Jewish people has returned to the land of Israel after 2,000 years of exile in fulfillment of both biblical and Quranic prophecies. I don't think he could be more explicit than that.
Absolutely. It's very explicit, but Uzbekistan is quite far from Israel.
There are 1.3 billion nations, Muslims, in the world, and there are a number of Muslim-majority nations which are pro-Jewish and pro-Israel and have very strong relations with us. And within Israel, there are many Muslims who serve in the IDF, the police, the border police.
You're thinking about the Bedouins?
Among others, but not only.
Mm-hmm. And we are talking about these nations in Central Asia who are pro-Israel and Muslim in the same time. We are very much interested who are these nations and what are their histories.
The Central Asian nations, there are five of them which became independent after the fall of the Soviet Union at the end of 1991. Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, and
Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan is in the Caucasus. Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan. These nations, these are ethnic Turkic peoples.
Mm-hmm.
They've been Muslim for 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
In Central Asia, you have all sorts of ethnic and religious groups that have been mixing and living together or fighting with each other for a long time. And they got used to more or less developing traditions of living together with different religious groups. Muslims, who are the dominant culture, Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, and other religions. They have a long tradition for this.
And you could say that today these countries are almost pro-Israel and not going with the extremist Muslim stream, what is against Zionism, against Jews, and against Israel and Holocaust denying.
Absolutely. There are old Jewish communities in Tashkent, Samarkand, there's the famous Silk Road. All one has to do is talk to Jews from these countries who immigrated to Israel. They'll tell you they lived well there with their Muslim neighbors. When the Soviet Union collapsed, in pretty short order, these countries established various forms of diplomatic relations with the State of Israel.
Mm-hmm. So we are having diplomatic ties with these countries. So we just can see that a more moderated and a more pro-Israel Islam also exists in the world. So what's going on? When we are opening up the TV, we are just hearing about terror attack and a lot of fanatic Muslims and the fanaticism that is reaching over Europe today. So we are talking about different streams within the Islam and the Muslim religion, but this doesn't have to do anything with each other, or how we could imagine this picture?
Well, first of all, from the journalistic perspective, as the saying goes, good news is no news. So journalists, for better or worse, it's much more interesting to write about a missile hitting a bus, as happened to us recently, than it is to write about daily flights between Tel Aviv and Tashkent.
Really? So these flights are exist?
Yes, there are daily flights in Tel Aviv to Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. As Sheikh Palazzi, the Muslim co-founder and co-chairman of Our Islam Israel Fellowship of the Root and Branch Association, jokes, he's from Rome, he says there are more daily flights in Tel Aviv to Tashkent than there are to Rome, where he lives.
So now I have to ask, like in a small bracket, who is this famous Sheikh Palazzi?
Sheikh Palazzi is a Sunni Muslim sheikh who lives in Rome, who is also a member of the Al-Qadiriya Sufi order.
So he is a mystic.
Yes. And Sheikh Palazzi has dedicated his life to teaching the world at large and Muslims about what he believes are the authentic traditions of Islam regarding Jews and a return of Jews to the land of Israel. It should have been welcomed as a fulfillment of Quranic prophecy and a sign from God.
What do you think that how Sheikh Palazzi got into this opinion and how he got his introduction to Judaism and to the connection with the Jewish people and Israelis?
Sheikh Palazzi started learning about the Holocaust at a young age and started to reflect on traditional Islamic teachings and how was it that the Islamic world came to be engulfed by Jew hatred, Israel hatred, and Holocaust denial. And his teachings are reflected in two speeches he gave, which we've published in the book. One is a talk that he gave to Professor Nachum Rakover's conference on Jerusalem, City of Law and Justice. He spoke in July 1996 on Jerusalem, a threefold religious heritage for a contemporary single administration, meaning, in simple English, that unite Jerusalem should remain united under Israeli-Jewish sovereignty. And then, in February 2000, he spoke at the counter-terrorism conference at the Interdisciplinary Center on the rise of what people would call Islamic fundamentalism or extremism, which is primarily Saudi Arabian Wahhabism.
We also heard that type of word, Wahhabism, and we are in the point. This is how we can understand the fanatic, radical Islam?
Yes.
And what is the origin of this stream?
In the 1700s in Arabia, the Al-Saud tribe, located in northeastern Arabia, in a very desolate and barren province called Najd, adopted the teachings of a man named Ibn Abdul Wahhab, who was excommunicated in his time as a heretic by Sunni authorities because of his heretical teachings.
He was fanatic and he was extreme.
Yes, unfortunately, you know, sometimes sectarian and heretical movements in a religion can be perfectly harmless. Doesn't mean that because they have a group has what to us as normative in our religion might be strange doctrines, that their strange doctrines calling them to murder or torture other people may just be strange doctrines. Look at the Baha'is, an offshoot grew out of Shiite Islam. The Baha'is don't bother anyone, but it's another religion that grew out of Shiite Islam, and they're persecuted. They were persecuted in Iran. They have their world center in Haifa. But their teachings don't teach them to cut off people's heads on videos. But in the case of the Wahhabi movement, this particular form of sectarian and heretical Islam was very dangerous, because what emerged was a satanic death cult.
And they became excommunicated, but they just spread out.
The Wahhabis, as they are called by Sunnis and Shiites,
mm-hmm.
call themselves Salafis.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for the Muslim world in particular, and the West of the world in general, the Al-Saud conquered Mecca and Medina, the holy cities of Islam, from the Hashemites between 1924 and 1926, giving them control of the holy cities of Islam. And by the end of the 1920s, they had conquered a good deal of the rest of the Arabian Peninsula, giving them control in the east of the oil-producing regions
mm-hmm.
where the Shiites lived.
So that was the real problem.
This is a terribly toxic mix of theology and economics. They both
mm-hmm.
had the money from the oil, and they had control of the holy cities of their religion.
So with that, you can say that they are, because they are having money and they can sponsor institution, they took their hands onto the Islam education, and they are having the money to finding different extremists and terror groups?
Exactly, as you said it. They have been funding the worldwide spread of their sectarian and heretical, from the point of view of normative Sunni Islam religion, for 250 years. And unfortunately, for the last 80 years, they've had the oil money to do it
mm-hmm.
and control of the cities of Islam to which Muslims come on pilgrimage from all over the world. It's a terrible dark cloud
mm-hmm.
over the Islamic world. And hopefully it will be removed.
So you think that that today there are so many terrorism and so much blood and so many dark sides of Islam because of their influence?
Primarily, without attempting to romanticize the history of Islam or anyone's history in the world between the expulsion from Gan Eden to the coming days of the reestablishment of the kingdom of David and Solomon, the world's a nasty place.
Yes.
Everywhere. Maybe in some places it's less nasty. What was the Scottish philosopher who said, David Hume, said, life is short and brutish. Maybe it's a little bit longer and a little bit less brutish. But the world, for most people today, right now, this world is not a very nice place.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not over-romanticize that there was this wonderful, charming, Arcadian Islamic world and these big, bad Wahhabis. They are bad.
Mm-hmm.
But life elsewhere is also bad. They made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
But they teach... Again, a satanic death cult. And the best thing that can happen for the Muslim world and for the rest of the world is they are removed from Mecca and Medina, the oil is taken away from them, they're sent back to Najd, locked in there for
mm-hmm.
the next 1,000 years, and somehow a joint commission of Sunni and Shiite, if you want to use the term moderate, say more enlightened and humane clerics, is given control of the holy places. And a group such as the royal line in Morocco or the Hashemites are restored. They can use the oil wealth to finance. The blessing that was given to Ishmael was squandered.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason anyone has to be poor in the Islamic world. Even if you don't do anything,
mm-hmm.
everyone should have a little house to live in, running water, flush toilets, medical services.
Mm-hmm.
The Islamic world's a disaster. A third of the adults can't read and write. Mass
really?
Unemployment. 1 million children in Egypt who are homeless. 2 million people who sleep in the cemetery there called the City of the Dead, the great cemetery of Cairo.
Yeah.
They use, what did they use the money for? Weapons that they don't use and don't know how to operate anyway. They did virtually nothing to improve their own societies. So they were given a blessing and it was taken from them. It's being taken from them now. We would like to see the Al-Saud and the ruling families in the Gulf states removed from power, their assets seized, and the worldwide global Wahhabi murder networks they operate shut down.
Yeah, and do you think that today the Wahhabis are having hands in other organizations outside Saudi Arabia?
Most of what we know as Muslim extremists, fundamentalists, Islamo-Nazi, Islamo-fascist, I object to these meaningless terms because they blur people's eyes and make it more difficult to focus on the real danger which has an address. Most of what we know is these kinds of organizations, Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, its sister organization, the Hamas, which is the Palestinian branch of the International Muslim Brotherhood, the Taliban,
Wahhabi. So it means that we found the reason why the Hamas is Hamas, because it's also Wahhabi.
Yes. They do get money and support now from Iran, despite the fact that the Wahhabis and the Shiites can't stand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sheikh Palazzi says the Khomeini movement is to Shiite Islam a kind of distortion and aberration as the Wahhabis were to Sunni Islam. Both united by tremendous hatred for Jews, Israel, the West, any kind of modern values. They have to be destroyed.
And I heard about the mystical spiritual tendency within Islam, but it's called the Sufi.
Yes.
How the Sufis and the Wahhabis connect to each other?
The Wahhabis and the Sufis are mortal enemies. And unfortunately for the world, it's not the Sufis in control in Mecca and Medina and controlling the oil. But it's like the Jedi and the Sith in Star Wars, sons of light, sons of darkness. In this case, the terms really apply. The Wahhabis are very dangerous. All one has to do, don't even look at it, just know there's a video of Daniel Pearl having his head cut off with a dirty knife in slow motion. This is the handwork of the Wahhabis. There's nothing to discuss with them. They have to be exterminated.
And in your book, you would like to show that not every Muslim is a Wahhabi, and that's why you are talking about and writing about communities. For example, in the Central Asian communities, who are having different opinions.
Yes. In fact, it's the opposite. There are very few Wahhabis. If you take away the oil wealth and control of Mecca and Medina and the global networks they've set up, 90% of the world Muslim population of 1.3 billion Muslims are Sunnis. The other 10% are Shiites. There aren't that many Wahhabis. But they control the oil, and they control the holy cities of Islam, which gives them tremendous economic and theological power to spread their darkness.
I see. Could you tell me how the countries of Central Asia are practicing Islam? What is the difference between their Islam and between the radical Islam?
The Central Asian ethnic Turkic Muslim, Sunni Muslim majority countries are Sunni Muslims. They've been Muslim for 1,000 years. And let's come to another point. When you move out of the Arab world, the whole cultural religious framework for Islam changes. Only 20% of the entire Muslim world is Arab. And then it depends, what do you define as Arab? Does that include the North Africans? According to Dr. Ader, many people in Iraq and Syria would not want to be called Arabs, which also shows you how, in their own world, the idea of identifying an Arab is not considered very high on the global totem pole. The Turks, don't call a Turk an Arab. You start a riot.
Even the Iranians.
They are mortal enemies. Now, the world's most popular Muslim countries are number one, Indonesia, number two, Bangladesh, and number three, the third largest group, is in India.
But in Indonesia, there are also fanatics.
Of course. The Wahhabis have been very active spreading their doctrines throughout the world, and every Muslim country has to deal with this. And they understand what the problems are in their own countries. Where the day before I went to press with this book, on December 30th, 2009, the former president of Indonesia, Abdurrahman Wahid, died. He was always a friend of Jews in Israel. He called publicly for the Muslim countries to recognize the state of Israel. I have a dedication which I added one day before. I wanted this to be published something by midnight 2009. I added a dedication in honor and memory of Abdurrahman Wahid.
Stay tuned for the second half of Welcome to the Tribe with your host, Gabriela Lichko.
My name is Terry, and I live in California. I am happy that I'm able to get IsraelNationalRadio.com. I can't believe that anybody in their right mind would be against Israel.
My name's Ari. I'm from Long Island in New York, and I listen to IsraelNationalRadio.com.
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 Many mikvahs in Israel are worn down and in need of repair. Mikvah Mayim Chaim specializes in the construction of well-designed, modern mikvot. Mikvah Mayim Chaim ask you to become partners in this holy endeavor to provide mikvahs, ritual baths, for men and women throughout Israel of all walks of life. To help, please visit hamikveh.co.il. Again, that is hamikveh.co.il.
And we're back with Welcome to the Tribe with Gabriela Lichko.
Knowing that you have a special interest in your show on world cultures, I want to introduce what, for me, is an important point. Because I've always been interested in world religions. I went to Swarthmore, a college founded by Welsh Quakers outside of Philadelphia. And Pennsylvania was a Quaker colony founded by William Penn, one of the first places to expound the doctrine of religious freedom, not tolerance, freedom. You have a right to believe what you want as long as you don't murder, don't steal, don't this, don't that, throw out the garbage and be a nice person, I the Noahide Covenant laws. And William Penn writes about the Noahide Covenant laws. I have a special major in religion and the philosophy of science. So I've always been interested in religion. And one principle animating our work and the way we feel Jews and Israel should relate to the rest of the world is most people come from traditional religious cultures. Religion is part of the culture. If you lobotomize that and say, because I'm a secular Jew or Israeli, so are you, I'm not understanding you. If I want to understand most people from most of the world today, religion is important to everyone, including in so-called secular Europe. Baloney. How do I know that's not true? All you have to do is go into any bookstore anywhere in Europe, go to the religion section. Not denominationally defined, but in broad sense. Religion, mysticism, mythology, occult, magic, all of that. They're packed with books, CDs, DVDs, because as our Torah says, man does not live by bread alone. They understand that, and if we want to relate intelligently to the non-Jewish world, we want to use what makes us a superpower, which is out the deepest teachings of our Torah. That's really what the world wants to see us live a certain way and to talk to them about what God gave to us. There are no secular Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. You don't believe in this.
Absolutely
not. Even
are,
there are the atheists and don't believe in anything.
Scratch the surface and underneath a secular Gentile is a something else. Now, there you want to be very careful. As we know, it says in the text that Joseph was thrown in the pit. The pit was empty, but Rashi says it wasn't empty. It was filled with snakes and scorpions. Nature abhors a vacuum, as Rabbi Horowitz said in the lecture I heard at Yeshiva Devar Yerushalayim. If it's not spiritual nature abhors a vacuum. If it's not filled with life-giving teachings of the Torah, then the teachings will come from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take an example about that. Everybody knows that Richard Wagner was steeped in Germanic mysticism and tribal religion, and he became radically anti-Jewish, calling for the extermination of the Jewish people later in his life. At one point he said, oh, so you could nullify yourself and give up your Jewishness. Most people don't know that in 1848, in the revolutions, the humane liberal revolutions of 1848 in Europe, the early Richard Wagner was a believer in the rights of man and democracy and the most advanced European thinking. But after rationalism comes romanticism, and there's the famous drawing of Francesco Goya called The Sleep of Reason, with all the bats coming out of the hell of the person's mind. If the pit, if the empty space in people's souls is not filled with the life-giving teachings of the Torah, there are all sorts of other teachings that will flow in there, as we've seen in the last 200 years.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And what do you think? That type of Islamic thinking, what you are describing in your book, the cracking the Quran code, it could come a place in Israel as well, and it could be popular in Israel as well.
Let me give you an example from our own personal experience. We use an Arab taxi service called Hadar. Well, we use them in the beginning for two reasons. One, the drivers came on time. Two, they turned on the meter and they didn't argue about the price. Mm-hmm. Though over the years, Rahavi and other taxi services have sort of upgraded their service. Mm-hmm. They come on time, they turn on the meter, don't argue about
That's the place of the advertisement.
Pardon me?
That's the place of the advertisement. It's just a joke.
No, this is not a joke. This is why we use Tadar. And we have what my wife calls the taxi driver test, because we've been using Hadar for 12 years. Some of these drivers know our girls from when they were little. They just turned 20 and 21. So my wife asked the following questions to the drivers. I know that it says in your Quran that God gave the land of Israel to the Jews. Now, I'd ask your listeners, like we discussed before, how do you think most of the drivers responded?
Of course not.
And that was your response when we discussed this. The fact is, with one exception, every driver said to my wife, really? You read my Quran and you know what's in it? First of all, they like the fact you know they even have a book. Mm-hmm. That you want to talk about it. That you talk about it with respect. And then the specific question, that our Quran says that God gave the land of Israel to the Bani Israel, they say, yes, of course. You know that too?
So why they are acting so differently, lot of them?
Maybe they're waiting for us. Let me tell you what, that's part of it. Also that the PLO and the Hamas have been busy pumping Jew hatred, Israel hatred, and Holocaust denial into the heads of these people with no counterforce for decades. And that takes a terrible toll. And we have not been using our own Arabic and Persian language services or the institutions of the state to teach about Muslim Zionism. And there's also a reason for that.
Do you think that a person like Sheikh Palazzi and his teachings could be popular and well-known and well-established in Israel?
Absolutely. As Sheikh Palazzi has said, if there was to be a chief imam, like a chief rabbi of the IDF, and he was invited to be the chief imam of the Israel Defense Force, he would gladly accept the position. But there's an ambivalence about this from Israelis for many reasons. First of all, if you're a secular Israeli, the Quran says, like the Bible, God gave you the land of Israel, but on Tanaim conditions. He didn't bring you back here to go to the mall on Shabbat. There are several. People know, people say, the Quran says Jews are pigs and monkeys. But what does the Quran say in the three places where it says that? There are four. It says Jews who don't observe Shabbat are changed into pigs and monkeys. Now, if you're not religious, you're going to have a problem with that. I hear it from the rabbis in B'nai Brach and Borough Park and Bayit Vigan. Not to hear it from the Muslims? I don't want to hear that. What did one taxi driver from years ago say to me as I was going home to the neighborhood where we live in Jerusalem?
Which neighborhood you live?
Givat Hanania, which most people know as Abu Tor, which we nickname Abu Torah. Mm-hmm. He said, there are three things that I don't like about Jews in Israel. So I was waiting to hear, what is it, the settlements, the settlers? These were the three things that he didn't like. And again, when you're dealing with people from traditional religious cultures, which is most people in the world, including so-called secular people. Listen very carefully to what they say. Listen to their songs. Look at their arts. They'll tell you what they think and feel. If you pay attention, we pay attention. He said, I don't like three things about Jews in Israel. Number one, they drive on Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the girls aren't dressed modestly. And number three, they eat chametz on Pesach. This is a Muslim
really?
Talking. Now, one problem Israelis and Jews have, there's a good side to it. And we are the chosen people. So I'm God's gift to humanity. Is I've decided, whatever the subject is, I know, therefore, it doesn't even matter what you say. I'll tell you what you should think and feel, because I know. That's not our approach. We listen very carefully. No, you tell me what you feel and think. And this is what they say, that they feel and think. So, the Israelis have not utilized these powerful teachings. And also because, you know, it's something maybe a different, you know, a different way of looking at a different approach to relating to an issue is different. So there's a hesitancy to utilize these teachings.
Mm-hmm. I see. So again, what do you think that how much percentage of Israeli Muslim public is ready to think like the Muslim way of thinking you described in your book?
I don't know, number one. And number two is, we won't know until there's a real massive Muslim Zionist educational campaign from the Israeli government, from the rabbinate, with Muslim clerics who would be backed in spreading these teachings, because they know who Sheikh Palazzi is. There's a reason why there aren't fatwas issued against Sheikh Palazzi. He's not like Salman Rushdie, who says Muhammad was a monkey and the Quran is a dish rag. No, he doesn't say anything. He'd have a problem. Just like if you had an Orthodox, a Torah true, quote-unquote, Orthodox rabbi who gave an opinion, if it's not outside the Masorah, someone else might say, gee, I don't like that opinion, but I can't find anything wrong with his thinking process. That's how Sheikh Palazzi, they know who Sheikh Palazzi is. He's the little boy who says the emperor in the Islam, Muslim and Arab world, of Jew hatred, Israel hatred, and the Holocaust denial has no clothes. And many of them are glad he does. Because once you've unleashed these demons and dragons and monsters, and you're riding on you the sorcerer's apprentice, maybe it was useful to take people's minds off their troubles, blame the Jews. Historically, that's in every culture. You have problems, blame the Jews. Blame the Jews. Don't know how to stop it, even if they want to. How do you stop something like that? So here's, as Sheikh Palazzi says, I live in a relatively free country, Italy. I have the right to speak, and I have an obligation to speak for those who think like me in countries where they are not free.
He never get death threats
No.
from the fanatics?
This is a question that's often asked by Jews. No. They know who he is. The Saudi Arabian government sends him every year an invitation to come on the Hajj. No, thank you. They correspond with him.
Really?
There's a case I know about where a Wahhabi young buck type told his professor in Arabia, I'm going to show that Palazzi, sent him a series of questions or comments. Palazzi wiped the floor with him, which he usually does, and he went with his tail between his legs back to his teacher and said, he humiliated me, look, he made a fool of me. And the teacher said, and we know this, to the student, because it was in writing, I warned you not to start an argument with the Sheikh Palazzi. And then the teacher made the following astonishing comment. I cannot say I agree with Sheikh Palazzi's conclusions, but there's nothing wrong with his... He doesn't go against the religion in any way. Later on, in writing, this professor at this university in Saudi Arabia more or less repeated Sheikh Palazzi's teachings. He said, let's stop lying to ourselves. Why have we been defeated in every war against the Jews in Israel? God is telling us that he's not with us. That the real Nakba, the real catastrophe, was not the establishment of the state of Israel. Forget whether it's secular religion, any state of Israel. The real Nakba was we did not see what the Quran refers over and over again to as the signs of God. God was speaking to us.
And what do you think?
We threw it out.
And what do you think? What was the reason that when the state of Israel was established, they didn't look in the Quran?
In the 1930s, the Mufti Khaja bin Hussein, who was appointed by a Jew, Herbert Samuel, and his gangs murdered thousands of Arabs and Muslims who wanted to welcome the Jews.
Really?
Robert Satloff wrote a book about this, about Muslims and Arabs who wanted to work with us, to welcome us. The bad guys had the weapons and the organizations. That simple. They had their SS and their SA, and the good guys didn't. The bad guys won, and everyone lost because of that. Then, also as Sheikh Palazzi says, the establishment of a flourishing Jewish society, liberal and democratic, I mean, relatively speaking, compared to the Arab and Muslim world, is very threatening to the tribal autocracies there, as till today. When you look, when people are rebelling all over the Arab and Muslim world, mostly, with a few exceptions, are they talking about Jews in Israel and Palestinians and settlements? No. They're talking about things that any normal person would talk about. I want to be able to work. I want to be able to live. I don't want to be humiliated by bureaucracies. Why are our societies so backward in the west of the world, or parts of it are so advanced? We have all this money. They're in rebellion. Why are a few people rich and most people poor? So, the establishment of an advanced, democratic Israel flourishing was threatening to the tribal ruling classes in every neighborhood, neighboring society. It was terribly threatening, and it still is. And the people are now exploding in rebellion. As one commentator wrote, one lady in Tahrir Square was asked, is there something you'd like to say? She said, yes, I'd like to thank Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. The Jew, he gave a voice to the voiceless. As Daniel says, in the end of days, knowledge will increase. And it has. And as Isaiah says, God says through his prophet Isaiah, in the end of days, the earth will no longer hide its slain. It's very difficult these days to conduct a mass murder, and it doesn't get seen.
Another interesting question. Israel is having many, many Bedouins. And the Bedouins are known by Muslims, but some of them are quite pro-Israel. What could you tell me about this group?
Unfortunately, the bad guys have been making terrible inroads among the Bedouin community. I can't comment on Israeli government policy vis-a-vis the Bedouins, but I would say again, when you're dealing with people from traditional religious cultures, such as Arabs and Muslims, speak to them on the deepest basis about religion, like my wife does with the taxi drivers. They respect people who respect their religious traditions and their religious culture, because you can't, again, with culture, and I will come back to this over and over again, you can't separate religion from the culture, because religion is pervading the culture at the deepest levels in most countries in the world, including right here. That's how you solve the problem. You speak to them, if the problem can be. Sometimes problems can't be solved. Sometimes the answer is you don't like Sheikh Palazzi says, you don't want to live under Israeli Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel, so leave. And one of Sheikh Palazzi's favorite rabbis is Rabbi Meir Kahane, who said, if you accept, follow the Noahide covenant laws, and Israelite authority in the land of Israel, you're welcome. You have a problem with that, go! And Palazzi says Rabbi Kahane was right about that.
And do you think, could you mention a couple of names who were parts of the Israeli Muslim community and they followed that type of ideology that Sheikh Palazzi is having?
Well, let's start with the Cherkessim, the Circassians of Abu Ghosh, Rechaniya and Kfar Kama. Abu Ghosh is outside of Jerusalem. Rechaniya and Kfar Kama are in the Galilee. They are not Arabs. They are Circassians from the Caucasus. In Abu Ghosh, they came about 800 years ago at a time when there were Circassian sultans. In Rechaniya and Kfar Kama, they came during the Turkish-Russian wars in the Caucasus, which caused real mass murder and genocide. People fled anywhere. The Sirkaj Muslims are very Zionist and pro-Israel. And
they go to the army?
They are very proud to serve in the army, the police, the border police, and at the time of the British in Abu Ghosh, they hid from the British Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Shamir, and Gula Cohen. And incidentally, anything I'm telling your listeners can be verified. Just go to the internet or call Gula up and ask her. They're very warm family connections back and forth with them. They stood in Battleground by Shmuel Katz, a blessed memory, who died about a year or two ago. He writes about the people in Abu Ghosh. These Muslims are with us. Then you have the Bedouins. And then among the Arab Muslims again, it's a patchwork quilt. And because of the tribal nature of their society, you want to know, again, tribe by tribe, clan by clan, family by family, and village by village. And again, I would say, you want to have, from Zion will go forth the Torah and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. How about starting right here, right down the street? Let Muslim Zionist education go out to them. Say, your own scriptures according to your own traditions of interpretation. It's very important, traditions, because Islam, like Judaism, has a Masorah. They'll want to know, okay, the text, does my Rashi and Rambam say that's what it says? The answer is yes. And that's why in the 200 pages of quotations from and commentaries on the Quran that we used the translation and commentary of Professor Abdullah Yusuf Ali. All I ask your listeners to do is just type in his name in the internet. You'll see that the translation into English and commentary on the Quran, most beloved by the entire Muslim world, is that of Abdullah Yusuf Ali. And then you have to be careful to get an edition that has not been corrupted by Saudi Arabian-controlled publishing houses, that's exactly true to the third edition from 1938 from Lahore. We use this because Sheikh Palazzi said the Muslim world respects him the most. And he gives you, like Art Scroll and Judaica Press, a commentary digest. He'll take a verse and he'll say, most of our commentators say it means this. But he's very honest academically. But some say it means that. He doesn't name them so much, but he's known in the Muslim world that it's... He gives you the sense of the majority commentators, and he's very honest.
Mm-hmm.
So they respect him. And that's why when he died in 1953, because his name was so respected, the Saudis started producing editions which were, so to speak, for Teutsch and for Besset, like we spoke about privately. We spoke about the joke about the Yiddish translation of Shakespeare, translated into Yiddish and improved. All the references he has, the positive references to non-Muslim religions, the Wahhabi editions took out.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe Allah can be translated as God. So, but that wasn't a problem for Professor Ali. In the Wahhabi editions, God becomes Allah.
Mm-hmm.
They untranslate his translations, and his positive references to Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, and Judaism, they just disappear.
I see. And if somebody would like to get a copy from your book, how they can get it?
Our book is on sale at the primary publishing outlet, lulu.com, lulu.com, as an e-book or a print book. It's printed, packed, and shipped on demand, and is now available since January through any global retail outlet such as Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. Also, bookstores and retailers can purchase Cracking the Quran Code through Ingram Book Company, which is one of the world's largest wholesalers for retail outlets.
Mr. Galin, thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Welcome to the Tribe on Israel National Radio with Gabriela Lichko.
ההודעה התקבלה ממספר בינלאומי. התקבלה ביום שלישי, 24.
Shalom, Tovia. Please mention in your radio that the land is, Eretz Israel, is occupied by Arabs. Their own Quran, Surah number 5, 19-21 says, there Allah has given the Holy Land to the children of Israel. Surah 2:145 says, even though Yerushalayim is not mentioned, it says the Arabs should not follow the Qibla of Jewish people. That means Jerusalem is forbidden to them. And lastly, Surah number 17, I think is 145, it says, there Allah says that he will bring back the children of Israel back to the Israel. Thank you. Toda Rabah. Bye.
Message saved.